Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
This is A to D talk show where we agree to disagree. Today we're talking about abortion, the mother. And as once again, we have Michael Lockwood, an anti-abortionist who was very much on our show last week. We talked about abortion, the law, the individual, and the society. Today, we're going to dive deeper into the trivialities of abortions, and no other person to talk about this topic than Michael. So once again, Michael, I appreciate you for making our time to be here. I know it wasn't that easy. And I don't expect us to waste so much time today. So from our conversation last week, Michael, you had a whole lot of people, or not even a whole lot of people, you took a whole lot of shots from the pro-choice as to why they tried to justify the reason why abortion should be legal and why abortion is not outright murder. And once again, I'm given an opportunity to, you know, clear some of the questions we were not able to clear during the talk show. And I'm also given an opportunity to dive deeper into the intricacies of abortion. So Michael, thank you once again for being here.
Thank you.
Yes, so without no further ado, let's hit on it. The first question I want to ask you, Michael, is a question that one of the pro-choice people we had last week talked about. She said that there was a difference between the fetus and a human being. And the reason she gave was because fetus is more like, doesn't have consciousness, can't think, is very much different from a living human being. Can you just clear that premise?
Sure, yeah, I would be more than happy to. So I think when most pro-choicers say that the fetus is not a human being, what they really mean is that the fetus is not a person. Because biologically speaking, there really is no denying that the fetus is a human being. I mean, the science has been out for a very long time that there's an organism inside of the mother. That organism has unique human DNA. That organism is growing and developing. They satisfy all the biological criteria to be a distinct living organism, and the organism that they are is a human individual. I think when pro-choicers say that the unborn fetus is not a human being, what they really mean is whether or not biologically they're a human being, morally speaking, they are not a person. And so, I'd be more than happy to address that claim. Actually, something that's interesting is pro-choicers, they don't agree on what makes a person a person. So what my opponent was saying last week, the pro-choice young woman, she was saying that
Michael, I can't hear you again.
No, no. You can't hear me?
It's okay. The last thing I heard was what she was saying was a normal person. That was like one of the last things I heard.
Sorry, what was the last thing you heard?
That just you were going over saying that the pro-choice person was saying that the fetus is no human being. So then that was the last thing I heard.
Okay, so did you hear me say that they will acknowledge that biologically speaking, it's a human being, but morally speaking, the fetus is not a person?
No, I didn't
hear that. Is that the last thing I said?
No, I didn't hear that. Just go over it again.
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem.
I thought I had a good connection and I'm unmuted. Tell me if you stop hearing me again, okay?
Okay, no problem.
So the criteria for being a person actually differs depending on what the pro-choice person believes. Yeah. A lot of pro-choice philosophers will say that it's consciousness that makes someone a person. Others will say it's viability, the ability to stay alive outside of the mother's womb. Others will say that it's self-awareness, yeah. the idea that you know you exist as an individual. And still others will just say maybe it's being born or the ability to have empathy with other human beings. So they don't agree. And I think the reason they can't agree on what makes a person is because their criteria for what makes a person is arbitrary.
Okay, so I want to just understand so the thing is, when she made that comment last week, I asked her a question. And the question I asked her was, are you saying that a full-grown human being goes into coma due to an accident and then he's on life support, ICU, intensive care unit, he can't eat on his own, he needs support in every single normal activity, but there was an assurance. There was an assurance that in maybe 6 months, 9 months, that same person is going to be well, he's going to be alive, he's going to be independent of those supportive equipment. So the question I asked her was, if you're saying that the fetus is not a human being because it's dependent on the mother, is not aware of his environment, or the fetus is not aware of its environment, and doesn't have the ability to have emotions or empathy or sympathy or consciousness, can we say the same thing about someone who has lived for over 20 years but just went into a coma? And she wasn't able to answer that question because she just circumvented it. So I think that's a very valid point, actually. That's a very valid point. So, but the next question I actually have to ask you is this. Last week, you heard a lot of things about the woman, her body, her choice. Now, the issue I have with this statement is, it's almost as if the father figure doesn't even play a role in the decision making. Now, it's almost as if, you know, this baby inside a woman's belly, it's all its biological uniqueness belongs to the mother, but that's not true, because the baby is made up of chromosomes from the father and the mother. So when they talk about the woman, her body, her choice, it completely destroys the reason for reproductive the process of reproductivity, which is a man and a woman coming together to produce a baby. So That was the thing we saw. That was one of the arguments that I presented. But my question to you is this. The killing of a child, or what we call abortion, if the decision is made by both the father or the mother, who do we hold responsible for that? Because last week you said something that the consequences of killing, or the consequences of murdering someone, is mother, right? So the question is, who do we hold accountable? Do we hold the doctor who did it, or the woman who took herself to the clinic, or the couple, which includes the man, who made up the decision?
That's a really good question. Thanks for asking, Kalechi. So here's what I would say. The murder of a preborn child should be treated the exact same way as the murder of a born child. So what that means is, everyone who's involved, everyone who conspires against that child, should be charged accordingly. So think of a parallel example where a mom has a born child, a toddler, and she cannot stand that baby. For some reason, she's going through immense stress, and she decides that she doesn't want to give the baby up for adoption. But she can't stand having that child any longer. And for some reason, she's just not right in the head. And so what she does is she carries her baby to the doctor's office against the baby's will, this little toddler. She pins the child down on the operation table, and she asks the doctor to kill the child. So who's responsible in that situation? I would say the doctor is a murderer. The doctor actually actively killed the child, but also everyone involved who requested for the child's death is also guilty in some sense. Now, it may change depending on the situation, the degree to which that person is guilty, but however much they were involved, however much they were intending for the child's death, I think they should be charged accordingly. Just like with abortion, you have a mom. Sometimes you have a father pressuring the mom to do this, so he would also have a lot of guilt involved in that. If he paid for the abortion, then he's essentially someone who hired a hitman to kill another human being. And then in other cases, it's the mom herself who's actively killing the child by taking the abortion pill. So there's all these different scenarios, and I would just say they should all be treated as if you were killing a born child, because a preborn baby is just as valuable as a born child. So the murder of that baby should be treated in the exact same way.
Okay, so Michael, you made a whole...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, you made a whole lot of points. And the question I would ask you is this. The charging of the doctor, the mother, the father, charging them with maybe first-degree murder, second-degree murder, whatever it is, does that solve the impending problem of people thinking that, you know what, if I have a child and I'm not ready to, you know, take care of a child, I kill it, right? So let's look at it from a problem-solving perspective. So problem-solving perspective is, how do you want to change the mindset of people? You live in America, right? So do you think that the only way we can change the concept, the mindset of people, to make them understand that what is inside of you is a human being, and it is not morally right, because, I mean, America, it seems legal, it's not morally right to kill the child. So do you think that charging these people with murder is a direct solution to change people's mindset towards that, towards abortion?
Good question. So I don't believe it is the only solution. I believe it is part of a bigger solution. In order to explain what I mean, first off, I would say my anti-abortion ideology is actually a direct result of my Christian worldview. So the reason I think humans are valuable is because they're made in the image of God. And that's why I'm against abortion, because I think all human beings, including fetuses, are made in the image of God. So as a result of that, on the deepest level, I think that the answer to the problem of abortion isn't just criminalization. I think it's the gospel. I think the reason that people are having abortions is because they hate God and they hate their baby, and they're living in sexual immorality. There's no reason anyone would ever get an abortion if they weren't living in sexual immorality. So that's an even deeper problem that needs to be solved.
But hold
the way
on.
You solve these problems is...
When you talk about sexual immorality, you completely ignore the fact that people abort their babies because of family planning.
That may be the case, but I really don't see any reason why any married couple who's actually engaging in sexual intercourse and love and in a God manner would not want to have a resulting child.
I mean, people have this concept of, you know, I want to have two children, and that's all, and that's what they plan for. But something happens, and then the woman becomes pregnant, and they do what they have to do. They look at their budget, they look at how much they're earning, they look at the they look at the future that this child may end up facing when he becomes, when he's born. And the question becomes, how do we, you know, in quotes, save this child from a future that, you know, is not very pleasant? So they go ahead to kill the child. So that, I mean, I've seen a lot of scenarios like that in, most especially, yeah, even in the US, I've had a lot of stories concerning that. So.
Okay. Well, I would still say that the answer to that problem is the gospel, because I'd say it's an unbiblical viewpoint to view children as anything other than a blessing from God. Oh. And when you're engaging in sexual intercourse in such a way where you're doing this thing, you're doing this act that's directly ordered toward pregnancy and childbirth, and you're doing it with an active desire not to have children, that just doesn't make sense. I would say that that's not biblical thinking. Anyone who's engaging in such behavior that is naturally ordered toward having children should know that, or should be ready to have children. And that's why in America especially, vast majority of cases, if not all cases, the reasons people have abortions is because of sexual immorality. They're engaging in sex for pleasure. Maybe they're having an affair, or they're sleeping with their boyfriend or girlfriend, or maybe in very tragic cases, it was because a man raped a woman and he was the perpetrator in that case. In all these cases, it all boils down to that sin. And then there are other sins involved. But all that to say, that's why I believe it needs to be a gospel issue. We need to pair the anti-abortion message with Christian message in order to solve the problem. So I do think that criminalization is a key answer to the problem, because the law is a teacher and it teaches people to do good rather than evil. But also, in order to further incentivize people spiritually and morally to do the right thing, we need converts to Christianity as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But again, you said a whole lot of things about the gospel, right? Your partner, that's the pro-life partner you had last week, she's Muslim, and there are people in other religions outside Christianity who still believe that, see, man, killing a child is it's mother. Like, there is no, maybe they are drawing their conclusions from their faith, but their faith is not necessarily Christianity. So you're talking about the cure to this immoral behavior of abortion. You're talking about it from the standpoint of Christianity, saying that another way is to preach the gospel, to spiritualize it. But what do you have to say to people who are not Christians, but who have a faith that they hold up to, but I still believe that mm-hmm. killing a child is murder? Do you think they're in the wrong? Do you think they're in the wrong line? I mean, what do you think?
So I'm very happy that they believe abortion is murder and that they believe it's wrong. And of course, as a Christian, I would always want to evangelize to such a person. But also, from a different perspective, even, I would say that the value of human beings and the wrongness of abortion makes most sense in a Christian worldview. And that's simply because of the fact that it's according to Christianity that humans are actually made in the image of God. That's why human beings are, they have dignity, they have intrinsic moral worth. It's wrong to disrespect them. It's wrong to hurt them. It's wrong to murder them, steal from them, lie to them. I think that's where you find the most thorough and rigorous basis of human value in the first place. And so, especially with beliefs, no one from our last week, Joe, was an atheist, can't ground human value or morality at all in an atheistic worldview, because humans really are just ultimately evolved from pond scum, and they aren't spirits, they aren't made in the image of God. They're just evolved animals. So any worldview other than Christianity is going to have a pretty hard time making the same case for human dignity that Christianity does. And that's why I would say one reason that Christianity is the answer to the abortion problem, but also at another level, I think the gospel is the answer to every problem in society.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael. So what do you have to say also concerning contraceptives? So I think these are drugs people take that avoid them from being pregnant. So what do you have to say about that?
About contraceptives?
Yes, about contraceptives.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a pretty big question.
So let me narrow it down for you, Michael. Let me narrow it down for you, right? Let me narrow the question down for you so you're able to understand where I'm going to. You said the people who are involved in sex should be involved in it because they're expecting a child. I don't know if that's what you said, but if I heard you right, that's what you said, right? So,
right. And anyone who's involved in sex irresponsibly, they shouldn't be surprised if they become pregnant.
Okay. So the question is, if people who want to get involved in sex, but do not want to have the repercussions, but do not want to bear the consequence of pregnancy, say, you know what? Fine. Let's circumvent this issue. What we're going to do is we're going to take contraceptives. We're going to make use of protection. What do you have to say concerning the use of contraceptives to avoid being pregnant? Can you equivocate it to abortion, preventing pregnancy? Can you say preventing pregnancy during sex is the same thing as avoiding or terminating pregnancy after sex? Hello, Michael.
No.
Okay.
So I would say it's not the same. So there's a big difference between preventing a human being from coming into existence and killing a human being. And so a contraceptive that actually prevents pregnancy does not kill a human being, but abortion does. Now, there is a big issue here that I have to address real fast. There are actually a lot of contraceptives which say they prevent pregnancy, but they actually do have abortifacient chemicals inside that can kill a child as a backup mechanism if it fails to prevent pregnancy. And I would always be against those contraceptives because they actually have the possibility of killing a very young child. And so I would advise everyone from avoiding using kinds of contraceptives. I don't know exactly which all ones they are, but there's a lot of research still being done, and there's actually way more contraceptives than people realize actually have this abortifacient mechanism as a possibility. So it says it prevents pregnancy, but really what it does in that case is it prevents implantation, which is when the baby's already been conceived, but the baby hasn't been implanted on the uterus wall yet. And so it would actually end up killing the child if it failed to prevent fertilization from occurring. And so that would be just as wrong as abortion.
Okay. I think that's very much clear for me. So we had a conversation last week around worst case scenario when a woman gets raped. And you made a very bold statement, Michael. I mean, I thought about that statement throughout the week. He said that even if she gets pregnant, she doesn't have the right to abort the baby. Can you explain deeper about what that means?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
So I said last week you made a very deep statement last week. You said in the worst case scenario when a woman gets pregnant due to rape, you are still against the use of abortion. if she gets pregnant, it's rape. You're still against the use of abortion. Can you dive deeper into what you mean by that?
So you're asking me to respond to the case of rape?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm getting sort of a bad signal.
Yes, I'm asking you to respond to the case of rape.
Sure, yeah. So a couple of things I would say to that. First of all, I would say that rape is one of the most horrible acts any human being could do against another human being. I think it's evil, and it's my own personal opinion that rapists should either be receive capital punishment or maybe be castrated. That's just a side note, but I think rape is very evil. What I would also say, though, is that abortion does not unrape a woman, does not unrape someone. It's not the answer to the problem. The problem already occurred. The answer to the problem is counseling and emotional and psychological help and justice for the rapist. The answer is go and kill your child. And the reason we can know that is by thinking of an alternate scenario. Imagine a woman is tragically raped. She actually gives birth and keeps her baby. And then say that baby grows to 2 years old and the baby begins to resemble the rapist. And this is just bringing back trauma for the mom. It's very hard on her. The baby's costing money, using diapers, eating food. And it's just very difficult for this mother to take care of this child. Now, does she have the right to murder that baby? Of course not. Of course, she doesn't have the right to murder that baby. Why? Because it's always wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being, even if that human being was a product of a terrible act. So what can we learn from this? Well, what we can learn from this is that if the unborn child is equal in value to the born baby, it's just as wrong to have an abortion as it is to murder that born baby. So what we have to establish is that the unborn are equal in value. Now, I think that all humans are equal in value, and that's why I would say abortion is wrong, even in the case of rape. So I think it's often used as a hard case against pro-lifers or anti-abortionists. But really, it's just it is an emotional appeal. It's not a logical argument. Yes, it's a terrible situation, but that terrible situation does not justify killing a little baby. And I think the analogy I just explained helps to illustrate that well.
Yeah. But I have a very crucial question on the analogy you gave. Now, you said, like, okay, given the parallel example of a child being born already and then begin to look like the rapist, does the mother has the right to kill the baby? But what you may be missing, or what you may be oblivious to, is the fact that many people do not have a problem with a child, right? The most of the psychology of what is happening is the process, the 9 months process. So the analogy you gave is good, but it's completely ignores the 9 month process of childbirth. So many people justify the use of abortion for something entirely different, because what they are saying is this: you know what? It is fine for me to say, baby, I love the baby, right? They are cute. They are, you know, whatever emotional attachments you have to babies. But what they keep thinking about is the 9 months process. So the analogy you get is saying, does the woman have the right to kill the baby after she's been born? No. Right? No, she doesn't have the right to. But the question is this: people are thinking about the 9 months of maybe, you know, she's in school, she has to stop, you know, school for a moment or so. If she's at work, maybe she will have to stop work. Maybe people begin to ask her questions. Oh, I wonder what happened. Maybe she may begin to even get, she may even begin to be stigmatized. So can you give another analogy that inculcates the 9 months experience of pregnancy?
Well, I would say that pregnancy is a very special thing, and it's very difficult to come up with an analogy that addresses all the different factors in pregnancy, such as the physical changes and the hormone, the timeline, and everything. So it's difficult to come up with an analogy. But what I would say is, factors at the end of the day, if we take the I drew from the previous analogy, at the end of the day, shouldn't play into the morality of killing another human being. The difficulty of caring for a child, whether it be through pregnancy or nursing an infant or feeding a toddler and even paying for school for a young teenager, all those different things, they're different ways of caring for a child. But no matter how difficult that is, it can never justify murdering the child. And when the only way to get rid of a baby inside the womb is by murdering them, that I would say that's not the answer to the problem. And I guess here we get into the question of
but don't you think it exacerbates the problem?
What's that?
Don't you think even the pregnancy may exacerbate the problem?
Well, still, like I said, having an abortion does not unrape you.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you're going through pregnancy or having a born child and caring for that child, the memory is still there. And so I think the reason people appeal to the rape is because of this idea that the child will remind the mother of the rapist. And that's why she should be justified in getting rid of the child. But what I'm saying is, no, people who remind of traumatic events are not themselves guilty. Their value doesn't change, and we shouldn't be allowed to punish them because of that terrible event that happened.
Yeah. But Michael, my question is still, because like after the talk show last week, I had a lot of questions from different people. And the question is this, maybe the premise that people want to abort the baby because the baby may end up with like a rapist is very valid. But what people are looking at is this. I didn't bring this upon myself, right? This shouldn't happen to me in the first place. It shouldn't have. Now, what they are thinking in their head is, how best can I reduce the pain? Because, see, I feel like it is easier for us to talk about this issue. Because we may not be in, we may never have the experience. But I mean, I want us to have this. I want you to look at it this way. Yes, people may want to abort the baby because the baby may end up looking like the father. And nobody wants that, right? Valid point. But someone gets raped. And thinking about it, she's saying, this shouldn't have happened to me in the first place. How can I get through this situation? Because just to remind you, people who actually have consensual sex and get pregnant go through a lot of mental ill health from pregnancy. This is, they know that they're going to go, they knew what was happening, they got pregnant, and still they have a lot of mental health crisis. That's why you see some countries I think a couple of countries allow a woman to abort their babies if they think that it's going to affect their mental health. Now this is excluding the fact that the woman was raped. So I want you to speak to the fact that people may be trying to just reduce the pain that this act of rape, this ungodly act of rape brings by just, you know what? I'm not going to suffer for 9 months because of this. So, I mean, can you speak to that?
Sure, yeah. So, in order to address that, I actually have a quote I would like to recite. I don't have it memorized verbatim, but I have it pretty well memorized. This is actually a quote from a rape survivor. This woman's name is Jennifer Madrid, and she was speaking at a hearing in Texas, in my country, in favor of a law that would abolish abortion. And so Jennifer Madrid, she actually was raped, and she had an abortion. And then this is, I think, 15 years later, maybe more, she regrets her abortion, and this is what she says in front of the committee. She says, "People may say it is cruel to force a woman to go through 9 months of pregnancy after she's raped. But please believe me when I tell you that the real cruelty is telling a woman that the answer to the problem of rape is tearing apart and dismembering her little child." So this goes back to my original point, which is that abortion does not unrape a mother. All it does is make her the mother of a dead child. The trauma of the rape is still there, and now she's also involved herself in a murder. It does not help her. What she needs is psychological, spiritual counseling. And it certainly doesn't help the child who did nothing wrong and who's in that situation because of the same unjust act. The child does not deserve to be punished in that situation.
Okay, thank you very much.
So that's how I would respond to that.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael. Someone said something last week after listening to the talk show. I don't know if you can hear me. He said that there can be a way to circumvent this issue of women saying they don't have... You can't hear me. Can you hear me? Oh, boy. Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, so someone came up with a premise saying women who think they have issues...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Michael. People who have issues with, you know, finances, what the child is going to become, the future, that they can't give up their child for adoption. So what do you have to say with a woman having to go through 9 months of pregnancy and willing and giving up her child for adoption because she cannot carry on the financial responsibility that the child would need? Hello, Michael.
Sorry, can you repeat the last half of that really fast? My signal got slower.
Oh, okay. So what was the last thing you heard?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Michael. So my question, can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Michael. Can you hear me?
I heard you begin. I heard you begin a question about adoption.
Okay, yeah. So I'm saying, what do you have to say for a woman who goes through 9 months of pregnancy, only to give up her child because she's not able to carry on the financial responsibilities of the child? What do you have to say about that? Do you think that's the right thing to do rather than aborting?
Yes, I would be in favor of adoption over abortion. I think adoption can be a very good thing if the baby is being adopted into a loving family. That's wonderful. And I understand it may be painful to separate from a child you've just given birth to. And if that's the case, you know, I would always be more than happy to encourage that mother to try to raise the baby herself. But if she's really unable to, if she's not in the right situation, then yeah, I think adoption is also a good option if the family's a good family that the baby's being adopted into. It's always better than killing the child.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much, Michael. Are there any other points you want to make before we bring this to a close? Or do anybody have any other questions they need to ask? You can ask it on the chat. But Michael, do you have any other thing you think you need to address?
Sure. One more thing I'd like to address real fast, which I've done more at the beginning, but I think my signal is getting lost. Is just this idea that not all humans are persons. That's really what the pro-choice ideology comes down to, is that not all human beings are worthy of dignity and respect, and not all human beings have a right not to be murdered. And I would say that's wrong. All of the criteria they come up with, such as consciousness, viability, being born, self-awareness, all of those criteria are arbitrary. There's no reason to believe one over the other. But I would say that the reason it's wrong to kill someone is because they're made in the image of God, and that would include all human beings. And this, of course, is based on my Christian worldview, which I would be more than happy to defend at another time. But ultimately, I think this is the only non-discriminatory viewpoint we can have, is that all humans are equal. And that's why abortion is wrong. That's what I would sum up my ideas with.
Okay. So just to give you another opportunity, what are the toughest questions you have faced when you speak to pro-choice people?
I think one of the most special pro-choice arguments, which is different. It's probably a little harder to address than the other ones. And I think one of the pro-choice young last week actually mentioned this. It's the idea of bodily autonomy, which is the idea that regardless of whether or not the fetus is a person, it's still okay to have an abortion because they don't have a right to use your body. So it's kind of cutting around the whole question of personhood and just saying, regardless, you still have a right to an abortion. So I think it's pretty interesting. But the way I would respond to it is simply that, first of all, the mother's womb is actually naturally ordered toward pregnancy. And so to say that a baby does not have a right to live inside that womb, when that baby was put in there by a natural process, vast majority of cases, the mother herself caused, that just doesn't make sense. The baby's not an intruder. The baby's just living in his or her home. And second of all, your right to remove an intruder from your property, which is what the claim is, that you have the right to remove an intruder from your body, that does not include the right to murder that person. So many people will bring up the example of refusing to give your kidney to someone who needs a kidney, or refusing to give medical assistance to someone who needs that, and that, like, you have the right not to give medical assistance. Sure, I can agree with that, but that doesn't give you the right to actually actively kill the person who needs your assistance. And that's what abortion is. You're killing a child who needs your assistance. And so that's how I would respond to that.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael. I don't think anyone has a question. So thank you all. That very few people that came, you know, I don't know, maybe the timing is not good for everyone, but I had to make it 12 o'clock because I had to make it 6 o'clock because Michael suggested that. Please continue to, share the podcast with your friends. It will be uploaded hopefully tomorrow. And we also need funding, listeners funding. You can go to my podcast, and you'll be able to support us with any amount of money whatsoever. And the best you can do for us is to share the podcast and recommend it to people who need to hear it. Once again, thank you very much, Michael, for coming to spend time with me and with the audience, talk about abortion. And I really appreciate you, and I hope maybe for another topic, maybe another time, we'll have the opportunity to speak again concerning another topic. Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kalechi. Yes.
Bye. So next week, we're going to be talking about a topic called Moses versus Christ, the cross or the tablet of stones. So we'll have two people talk about this topic next week. Come prepared. Thank you. And remember, this is A to D Talk Show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. You can reach out to us on A2D, your talk show at outlook.com. Bye. And have a very wonderful weekend.